Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cuff. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond.
What's up with it, y'all? Man, don't change that sound. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that down. Wiggling.
Yeah, this is Cassidy the Hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dallas, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw, and you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio, and I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
Hey, what it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday nights. West West, y'all.
You know me, I just can't die. I've been down, but I'm back up. No, they all had a little crush. Now they all wanna live love. I've been getting comfortable on my own. Loving it, I can handle it, yeah. Long as I'm gonna love someone. Well, say I'm gonna be myself.
your man King Eric the Media Assassin. You're now tuning in to episode 527 of Off the Cuff Radio. And this show here is sponsored by Cocaine Buddy Boy Entertainment, Fleetwood and the Cop Pickers, Da Vinci Clothing, Jesse Boutique, and Core Financial. Got my host T-Max with the facts on the line. What's good, man?
What is going on, y'all? The freshest frequency of the airwaves on this wondrous Wednesday, Off the Cuff Radio. Shop Talk, our host, the spirit of all the family, ladies and gentlemen. We are live and direct, and we are ready to rock like we know how to do. Getting it cooking like chefs in the kitchen. You know what we're stirring up. King, tell everybody who we got tonight.
Man, this guy here, let me tell you, man, we go back about a good 10 years. We both were probably raising hell on Facebook together before Facebook became politically correct. But what I noticed about this guy is his work ethic. He'll tell you, we was raising hell on Facebook. We probably got more Facebook violations than anybody. But nevertheless, this guy's work ethic is impeccable, man. We talking about, look at the track record. From this track we just played from JoJo titled Man, he getting into his R&B flow with it. He worked with Nicki Minaj. He got certification with that. He did an album with the late Lord Infamous. He also got albums with Lil White, Frazier Boy. He did work with Pastor Troy, Young Buck. And he's putting in a lot of work right now, man. He's still on the groove with it. And he's finally going to be on board to chop it up with to tell us his story, what he's been up to, what he's got going on. What's up? Welcome. A good friend of mine, and welcome to Off the Cuff Radio, Beat God, y'all.
Yep.
Hold on one sec. We got to bring him on. Wait for this.
All right, we got to bring him in the queue.
You on, brother?
Can you hear me? We got him, King.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yeah, we got you.
Okay. What's up, brothers? Thank you for that introduction, man. I appreciate it, you know?
Yeah, man. We had to tell them how far we go back, man.
Me and knowing each other for a long time, bro. That's why I felt like it was only right to circle back and do an interview with somebody that really knows me in real life, you know? Not just in social media, like you knew me before, all of this stuff, actually, like when I was a freaking nobody and stuff, and you was right there banging with me the same way, like, so I appreciate it, but before any of these records, me and Eric was banging out, freaking getting Facebook violations together and shit, like you said, like, yeah, this is back when Facebook was a different place. It was different than it is now.
Two of America's most infamous on the internet waves, man.
Yeah, man.
Oh, man.
Yep.
Well, think about this. If Howard Stern and Dave Chappelle was online, man, that's what we was looking at that time, man. We was giving them algorithms hell.
You talking about 2013, 14, 15 back then? Like,
yes.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it ain't like it is now, man, but we've been paying attention to what's been going on, man. So before we get this thing going on, you got to let us know, man. Tell us what you got going on for the third and fourth quarter coming up.
Oh, man, all kinds of new shit actually going on. I'm working on a new shit with 21 Savage. I got new shit with Miss Mulatto on the way. We got new stuff with we had something going with Migos, but you know the situation that unfolded everything kind of pushed back. Rest in peace, Tate. So that kind of held up a lot of stuff in Atlanta right now in the music scene. So, but yeah, we got me and Little White are working on something new too, actually.
Okay.
Yep.
We got some B-Gods. King is obviously already well acquainted with you. I myself, T-Max, this is my first time, getting to chop it up with you along with King in this interview. Great to meet you, man.
Thank you, man.
Nothing but great things about you. He gave me the rundown on some of your extraordinary achievements and accomplishments of numerous accolades in the game in reference to how you have you know, basically moved. Obviously, he knows your history in more detail than myself, but I guess this is where we appropriately come in on the most incredible of intros following up. Obviously, you're a stellar superstar in what you do, putting it down on the production and so many other aspects of music. So I guess we get to the genesis of it. How'd you start?
Man, if I told you how I started, I would freaking laugh. Like I started, like, back when I was young. Like, me and my friend, my homeboy, right? This is like, back in, what was that shit you used to download on? LimeWire. Y'all remember LimeWire back in the day? You got to be real, real old school captain.
Fire
bro.
Music, but your computer might catch on fire, too.
Bro, so we had figured out, like, we were probably, like, in maybe, like, 8th grade, 7th grade, and we had messed around and downloaded Fruity Loops, like, Fruity Loops 2. It was, like, one of the original ones. We didn't know what we had back then, right? This is, like, probably, I want to say, 97, 98, you know, around that time and stuff. We didn't know what we had back then, though. So we would play with it and mess around with it. And, you know, just throughout over the years, we made rap groups and stuff. And I've done the videography side of it. I know how to shoot videos. I do engineering. I do songwriting. I do producing. Like, producing is what broke my career, but I'm well-rounded in anything in the music industry, you know. So, but we rolled from making beats on Fruity Loops 2000 on up, 2005, 2007. That's when I got my first break, you know, and I started working with Lil White, and I was introduced to Lil White. I want to say 2009, and we started working on his album like 2010. And from there, I met Pastor Troy, a lot of other people, Lord Infamous, DJ Paul, Juicy J, and started expanding from there. And this is when I got my first rap check, right? 2010, my first real rap check. It was like $15,000. I was like, holy cow, I know I made it. Like, like that was a lot of money back then, you know, in 2009, like $15,000. You like, woo, like for a few beats and shit. But yeah, I made my first real money with Lil White off of his album. I got paid, you know, like I said, $15,000 to do some of the tracks on the album. And I was like, man, I could, like, my friends were out gangbanging and doing bad shit. And I'm like, bro, I'm making more money than them sitting in the house on a computer like a lame. I'm going to keep being lame, you know, all these years. And it ended up paying off. And luckily now I'm in a really good position. But if any young people watching this shit, like, or older people, like, stay lame. Lame is where it's at. That's where the money's at. Like, all my friends was out thugging and gangbanging and doing stuff, and I was in the house learning how to download and make beats and stuff, and it pay off in the long run. So stay lame.
Man.
You know what's wild, too, man? You know what's wild, too, is a lot of the stuff that they were calling us lame for, you know, when you making beats or when we doing podcasts and radio, now they trying to do the shit. You know what I'm saying? And they trying to come into the lane.
Yep. Well, you know, it's always lame when you're the first one to do it, you know, or when you're ahead of the curve. So people normally don't catch on to it. That's a good thing about being a innovator, though, and a creative mind, because it's a gift and a curse being first, you know, because when you be first, you're always going to be the first one to get chastised when you're doing something different and stuff. But at the same token, you got a head start on everybody else that just now, you know, starting or thinking about getting into podcasting and getting into producing. You were doing it when it wasn't a trend, when it was lame. And it's easier, too, because it's genuinely in you. You're not doing it because everybody else is doing it. You're doing it because this is something that you like, and you're more likely to be successful at it if it's something that you really enjoy, you know. That's how I was successful with music. I really love music. It wasn't a quick lick to me. You know that. You seen me put in over a decade, and I put in a decade before that decade you met me, and I put in another decade. You know, like, this shit has literally been my whole life. Like, literally since probably 7th or 8th grade, music is not. I've taken off breaks, you know, a year here, a year there, go fuck off, or go try to do different things, but I always got drawn back to the music. And I had to quit fighting and just realize this is it. This is what I'm supposed to do is music and stuff. And I tried to fight it for the longest, though.
One thing about
it's hard
it,
when you're not getting paid.
Yeah. I mean, one thing about it, guys, one thing about you and King is you both have a shared
interest in terms of bettering the culture, of which the culture is all the more richer for both of you in it with your contributions. What you said about it in terms of understanding, having that vision, creating your lane where the pavement hasn't even been dug yet, finding that way when the illumination is not giving you the direction. You know, it's all about instinct because you have an interest, and from that interest, you are able to forge your own GPS of genius in it. One thing about when you look at the game of it, because music is a long and winding road of unpredictability and spontaneity all at the same time, because it can happen at once, and then it's unpredictable when or if it will happen. When you look at how it led up to where we are now, in terms of seeing you just totally just taking off, who are some of your influences in it, and what did you learn along the way about the industry? What did you learn about what it took in perseverance? What did you learn about yourself in all of this process?
Man, the first question I want to answer is what I learned about myself, because it's really important, and it's something that I still use now with other business adventures, that if you really want to do something, and, like, if you really want to do it, you can do it. Like, I'm a regular person from Columbus, Georgia, a small town, and I made a success out of just believing in myself. Like, I know it sounds cliche and it sounds corny, and you don't have to do the sellout stuff that everybody else doing to be successful in music and make a good living for yourself. Like, believe in yourself, believe and make quality products, and it's going to take time. I learned that. If I could do this with music business, I could do the same thing with another business. It's putting the same quality and love. If I want to go be open up a restaurant, I know that if I put the same quality and love that I put into this music and really cared about it and cherished it and stuff, it's going to eventually grow to something big. Like, a lot of people don't get to teach themselves that lesson that you can really grow something from a seed to a freaking tree that's giving the whole neighborhood fruit, you know? That's really what I learned, that I could really do it, like, anything. Like, this not music is just one thing. Like, you could take the same philosophy that Eric and me and you are doing right now and apply this to any business and do quality work and put in the time, and it's going to be successful. It's almost like the laws of the universe have to reward you for the time and energy and effort you put into it.
And one thing about it, guys, is one thing we notice is your humility and your appreciation in terms of understanding it, because we see so many artists come into this game who feel like they are owed something by meritocracy of effort. But we have to remember that old saying, hard work doesn't guarantee success, but there is no success without hard work. Coming into the game, when you saw it coming from Columbus, Georgia, before we go further, we gotta ask: Are you Yellow Jacket or Bulldog?
Man, neither one. I'm at Crimson Tide. I'm a Roll Tide fan.
Okay, Roll Tide.
My wife made me a Roll Tide fan. I really wasn't a Roll Tide fan, but I had to because she bullied me into it. So yeah, I'm a Roll Tide fan now, I guess.
Look, happy wife. Happy wife, happy life. So y'all got the egg spread out all over the house.
You get it.
Yeah, man. So, I mean, so Georgia, obviously, the state itself, most notably Atlanta, we've seen it for over 35 years, starting from LaFace with Babyface, of course, L.A. Reid, what they were doing, of course, Pebbles. Later on, we saw Jermaine Dupri with So Def, Criss Cross, TLC. We would get further in. I mean, this is not even talking about the sports influence, of course, with Deion Sanders when he was with the Braves and the Falcons. And then we get into the early 2000s. You know, this guy, you know, known as Chris Lover, you know, I think you know who he is. Had his joint Incognito, and then, you know, his first album on Underground, then reinvent himself as Ludacris, and then dropped his debut Back for the First Time. You know, I mean, of course, we're, you know, T.I., you know, Jeezy, you know, Gucci Mane.
Yeah.
I mean, you all, I mean, and of course the Migos will come later, you know. I mean, it's, you all have such a, and man, how can I be remiss without mentioning Outkast and Organized Noize?
Yeah, it's so many of them.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man. I mean, you know, shout out Kujo, you know,
Lil
Jon,
and
the East
Side Boys.
Yeah,
it's so many.
Lil Jon, I mean,
it's so many, bro.
You all had one big party going on down there, and it's been nonstop. How did it feel to be able to contribute to tradition and carry that flag of fresh on for your state in terms of the creativity and the diversity and sound, a cacophony of just all types of just dope?
Man, it's freaking cool, because, like, I live in Atlanta now. I'm from Columbus, Georgia, but I moved up to Atlanta. You know, I'm signed with Sony and stuff, but when I was with Atlantic, when I signed with Atlantic before I moved up to Atlanta, like 10 years ago, but it's freaking beautiful up here, man. To be honest with you, like, it's a lot of silly stuff going on up here, but it's built for success here. Like, and it feels good to be able to add a platinum plaque to the city, multiple platinum plaques to the city that were made here in Atlanta. It just feels good to be know that I'm gonna be forever embedded in part of the culture. Like, I never even thought about it like that until you asked that question, but I'm actually, like, I just did a Beers record with Nicki Minaj, and that's like 6 times platinum, and that was made right here in Atlanta. I'm actually part of Atlanta culture doing that. Like, I never even looked at it like that. Like, I'm forever gonna be a part of history of Atlanta. Like, that's pretty cool. You made me really think about that, you know. Like, I'm humbled by
I mean,
that.
Look, I mean, Peachtree,
Greenbrier,
I mean, the Mall, I mean, look, we got to shout out the HBUs, too. I mean, Spelman, Clark Atlanta, I mean, Morehouse. I mean, we got to shout out, of course, Georgia Tech. I mean, University of Georgia.
Yeah.
Shout out to Athens. Just, and of course,
they got a
rich culture,
man.
And we can't forget Freaknik, even if it's not the same how it used to be back in the day.
I'm gonna tell you, man, Georgia different, man. Like, it's different down here. Like, no lie, like, even when I was in school, and like when I played football and shit, like, and basketball and sports, like, people down here are different. Like, these dudes down here used to be huge, and like aggressive. They'd be like college grown men in like 7th and 8th grade. Like, it was ridiculous how we grew up. Like, it's not like that anymore. It's like everybody got smaller or something, you know. But I'm not tripping. Do you guys remember, like, in the 90s, like, and stuff, and in the early 2000s, like, the dudes were like bigger, like the football players, they were like huge in high school.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Okay. So yeah. Okay.
Them,
I thought it was just like
the Atlanta Hawks too. Them and the Atlanta Hawks too. They had Stacey Augman and Dominique Wilkins and Giants.
Man.
Yeah.
Playing Spud Webb, Kevin Willis. You know, I mean,
Karl Malone.
Yeah,
you don't even have people to sign Karl Malone size no more.
Dominique, man, Dominique hung with Mike on the dunk contest. So that go to show you right there, Georgia has some solid hitters.
Yeah.
Man, taking it back to the Omni days, man. I mean, of course, that 87 slam dunk championship. The 87 or 88 slam dunk championship, I believe.
He hung with a prime Jordan.
So you saw coming
that
to
show
Atlanta,
me right there. Yeah, that show me right there. The South has something to say right there. Going back to that. Go back before Andre said what he said. Dominique Wilkins hung with Mike. So.
Man,
I didn't even think about it.
We think about it back in the day with the Falcons and the Braves simultaneously representing hip-hop culture. Dion bought a swag. And shout out to what he's doing at Jackson State right now down in Mississippi, man. You know,
man, I like them. You know, Travis Hunter, he's from Georgia, too. A lot of them boys from Georgia. Travis Hunter from right down the street from where I live now. He like from 20 minutes from down the street from where I'm from. Where I'm at in Atlanta now. Yep.
I mean,
our boys went to high school right around the corner.
Yeah, and to see all of that,
it's
like, you pretty much got to Atlanta in a situation where the game was already in full motion in reference to the culture, in terms of the scene.
Yep.
Obviously, it was in motion, and then you watched to see some people, you know, just starting their movements. I guess we got to bring it back to you, though, for a second, guys. When you talk about your Atlantic situation, take us through the time of what it was when you actually, like you said, you talked about when you got your first 15 racks on it. But what was leading up into you actually getting into your first label situation, and what was that arrangement consisting of?
Great question. Like, after I got that first money from the little white situation and shit, you know, stuff had, I ain't going to say it slowed down, but the money just wasn't coming in, you know. It's like, and this was part that I was talking about, like, it's sometimes you got to be built for the long run in these type of games because it don't always pay out up front and stuff. So you just work. I moved to Atlanta after the little white situation and stuff, and well, not situation because we didn't fall out or anything, but after I got paid, moved to Atlanta, started working on beats and stuff, started messing around, and I linked up with a few different A&Rs and stuff, and got from the gracious of the Most High, I freaking got into the right room in Atlanta Record Rooms, and they had like some of the records I was doing. They like, I carried myself and stuff, and you know, and they signed me to a small deal. Like, it was a small deal. It was a $20,000 deal. It was nothing major. I took the deal. I needed the money at the time, of course, and I stayed with them for 2-3 years, and then I had got this big record, this Bia and Nicki Minaj record. That's the one that changed everything. But before then, this Bia and Nicki Minaj record and this Atlanta record situation, man, it was tough. Like, I was up here in Atlanta, you know, by myself. And then I met my wife, and then we got together and stuff. And so I'm trying to balance in between being a husband and a man, you know, and still do the music thing and the career thing while it's not making money, you know what I'm saying? So when you in these situations, you got to have a strong woman that really understand what you're trying to do, you know? Like, most of these women don't want to take you when you're broke and stuff. So she took me when I was broke. She was the one that really molded me, if you just want to be 100. Like, she took me when I was didn't have nothing and helped me build up to six-figure deals now. So, like, shout out to her. But when I met her, like, I didn't even, like, I had a car. It broke down and was busted on the side of the road. And I didn't even really have a car. I had an apartment, and that was about it. And a laptop laying on the ground. Didn't even have a desk to make beats on, you know. And now I'm just got a freaking house bill last year, and it's off, you know, from working and from music money and stuff. So, like, I think about this. I didn't have a car or even a desk to make beats on to just getting a brand new house built last year. And, like, so, and it's like I said, it's all from music. I didn't do nothing illegal or no, none of that stuff. It was literally just music money and working money. You don't have
that. That's how hard that is, man. Like, when you stand in Atlanta, because Atlanta is considered like car culture. You know what I mean? It ain't like you stand in the tri-state or you stand in Jersey where you can get around. You can get around on the bus.
Nah.
You can get around in the cab.
Nah. Yep. You get it. Like, yeah, Atlanta, they ain't really, they got bus and metro part of, but it ain't set up like New York and Jersey and shit. Like, this shit kind of bootleg down here. Like, it don't take you all over Atlanta. It take you certain places. You got to find a ride from there. But yeah, but not having a car in Atlanta, it was a hindrance.
If you in the South, you ass out.
I was assed out, and luckily, like I said, from the grace of the Most High, man, he brought me an amazing woman that freaking got me out of the mud and dusted me off and believed in me, and we took this thing and rolled this music journey out together. Like, she was right there with me every time I went to go meet a new A&R, or when the label wanted to sign me, or when the label didn't want to sign me, she was the one that boosted me up and stuff. So that's why it's beautiful to enjoy these wins with her. We just signed a $300,000 deal last year with Sony, and it's beautiful to be able to do it with a woman that was with me when I didn't have $200 in my pocket, you know.
One thing about it, we see so many, King and myself, we have been blessed to do so many shows talking to so many people, and you included. And we see how the ups and downs of this game works in the industry. You were very upfront and transparent about the struggles you had in terms of the starting out point. And this is also a song for men and women alike out there in terms of finding the right person, whether it's the woman looking for the right man or the man looking for the right woman. So many times people get seduced in the limelight of celebrity in terms of the fanfare, the glamour, the glitz, the paparazzi, the popping, the popular action. How important is it, number one, to keep yourself grounded, and number two, to make sure you find somebody who is really posted up with you and solid ground foundations and not catching the vapors, you know, just for the rub of the trappings of celebrity and fame?
That's where I see a lot of my friends fall into, you know. It's like, I see a lot of my friends in the music industry and stuff. I ain't saying names, but I see a lot of my friends, like, they get with these women and stuff, and when they're already successful and rich and famous, that don't mean that you can't find love and stuff. It's just, I'm a little bit more skeptical of it. Like, and maybe this is just my perspective of what I always thought a real relationship was. I seen this with my mom and dad did. They started with each other when they lived in a trailer, and then that trailer, my mom was cooking, and that trailer got burnt the fuck down, and they was homeless, and they still stayed together, and they stayed together, and they stayed together. So that's, you know, what my background is. And my wife, her parents is the same way. Like, it's important to me to have somebody that is with me when I'm at my low point. Like, you know, it would hurt me to just now be finding love while I'm already successful and shit, because I'd be scared. I don't even know if I can love nobody right. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know if I can give you the real 100% me if I met you when I'm already up, because I'm cautious of what your intentions are most of the time, you know?
Yeah.
Especially when you're dealing with this business here, man. Show business. It could be very trifling, man. People camouflage very easy.
Yeah. You know, I know. I've been in this thing for a long time, man. All praise to the Most High, man. I've been in this thing for a long time, man. I done seen it all. Yeah. I done seen so many people go. A lot of people I work with ain't here no more. Like, a lot of people I produce for, they gone. Like, it's crazy. Like, I talked to Lord Infamous before he passed away. I produced his last album before he passed, but, like, he was one of my friends. Like, people don't know that side of Lord Infamous. Like, that dude was really a good dude. Like, I don't know what he was when he was younger, man. But I met the older Lord Infamous when he was a full-grown man and stuff, and he was, like, one of the most beautiful people you ever freaking meet, man. Like, he was so pierced. Like, the first day I met that nigga, he said, man, you know what, big boy? He said, I swear he told me this. He said, big boy, this back when I was going by Big Boy Beats, not Beat Guy. He said, big boy, you're going to kill this shit. He said, you're going to be so successful because you're so pure, you're a good person. He said this to me in, like, 2008, 2009. We just in the backseat of the truck getting fucked up, smoking and drinking and shit. And he was like, man, you're going to be successful, bro. You're a good person. Like, you got it. Like, and, yeah, it's pretty cool to see that fruition, to know that somebody that's a legend like that saw that. Because he wasn't stroking my ego. It was just me and him together just chilling, just talking on some bro stuff. Like, me and you, like, we talking now. Like, it wasn't no, it wasn't nothing for him to gain by him boosting me up or nothing for me to gain by boosting him up. We was humble, just chilling. To have a legend like that, though, to see something in you back then and then to see it come to fruition, it's like, wow, this dude actually might have did know something, right? I was going to say, he told me the story, like, he told me so many stories, like, from I know the real story, how Three Six Mafia really got started. Like, I might be one of the only people in the world that know the real original story from Lord Infamous himself. But I'll get it. We'll get in that on another date, though. But, yeah, I'm definitely.
Understood.
Yeah.
When you see the game.
Working with Lord, man, I was going to ask you this, too. Like, because, you know, in the later years, you know, he was kind of like, he was on the downside. He was sick and everything.
Was that a struggle
in getting him back, like, in shape when it come to, you know, working with him?
It was, actually. Like, it was. Like, and me and Frazier, a lot of people don't know that Frazier, he had good people around him that loved him. Frazier Boy, Lil White, even Partee, he did a lot to you know, help him put their last albums together and get itself all the way back together. Like when I, like you said, when I met him, he was like at a different side of his career. But I also got to meet the real him. When I got to meet Lord Infamous without drugs, without like just weed, you know, and a beer or two. But like I got to meet the pure Lord Infamous. And he was freaking, he went out of here peaceful. I can tell you that. He had already made peace with himself. From all time talks on, he already had peace. Like, he had felt peace. It was all over him and stuff.
Yeah,
we helped him put that last album together and stuff. And he did a great job at it, but yeah, he had a lot of medical issues and stuff going on, and it was just a tough time and stuff for the whole camp then.
Man, and that's something,
man,
that's sobering when you think about it. Yeah,
that's a beautiful thing though, man. For him to trust you with his project, and you know, to oversee.
Yeah,
it, that's a beautiful thing.
And to be able to actually work with him, like we stayed the night together in the same house for like weeks at a time working on at the project and shit. Like you get to know people, you know, differently when y'all sleeping across the hallway and y'all got to eat lunch together and breakfast together and go to the club together and go to the liquor store together and go use the bathroom. Yeah, you got to, hey, man, you left a turn and talk, you know what I'm saying? No, not trying to talk about nothing like that, but you get to know the people on a different level when you live with them. You know, it's
right.
Yeah, it's just a different level when you live with a person versus you see them online. You get to know the real them, and I like the real Lord Infamous. Like, he was a good guy.
One thing about it that we've learned is when you are tasked with a project, working with somebody, it is a very intimate, it is a very thorough, it is a very painstaking process because it's all about you feeling that person out and that other person feeling you out as well, like you said, hence the importance of having the chemistry, being around each other. When you said about how he was so effusive in his praise of you, being so abundant with his accolades and compliments of you, like you said, it came from a genuine place. And we look at hip-hop today. We look at the culture. Competition is one thing. And if it's one thing about being striving to be great, but a lot of times, I'm going to just say it from my side of it, a lot of times with these artists, they will say they're just being competitive and they're just, when they make quote-unquote criticisms of other artists, they'll say, to me, after a while, it's not competitiveness. It's just flat-out hating. And that's what made it so special about what he gave you in terms of praise, because I think we need to spend more time in the culture lifting each other up and celebrating the milestones, achievements of what legendary careers have entailed and the respect that is due for those achievements and accomplishments.
I agree. Man, I agree with that. And the add on, the wagon on to what you're saying, like the culture and just in general, like it needs more love. Like we as brothers and sisters, we always laughing at each other and putting each other down. If you go open up a new business today, tomorrow, a brother and sister gonna be the first one to laugh at you and put you down and stuff. And like, we gotta get back to it. This is outside of even the music culture. This is a culture as people. And it's not even the color on this. You could be black, white, Hispanic, anything. We got to get back to loving each other, man, in America and just people. We put each other down. We treat each other horribly. We don't hold the doors for each other in the stores no more. We don't say, I love you. We don't say, hey, you look nice today to each other. And what I'm trying to basically get to is it's the art has transpired into the people. So when the artists be shitty towards each other, or we got a president, a leadership that's being shitty, it transfers to the people. Then the people start being ugly to each other in the stores and stuff and down the road and stuff. We need to get back to a place of love, I feel like. And that's when the respect will come. Like, I don't understand why everybody's so, like you said, hating on each other and mad at each other for and stuff. Like, it's enough space. McDonald's don't got hate on Burger King. They both exist together, and they both sell burgers, and they both good at it.
That's damn true. Coke and Pepsi. You don't see the CEO of Coke and Pepsi.
Yeah, exactly. You feel me? There is enough space out here for everybody to eat where you ain't got to worry about me stepping on your lane because you got your fan base and they only like what you're doing. They don't like what I'm doing anyway.
That's something to think about right there,
because
you never see the CEO of Coca-Cola tweeting out, fuck Pepsi.
Nah, real shit, though. Think about it. It's the culture. It's particularly the rap culture and our culture and stuff, but we got to get back to a place of love, man. Like, just loving each other. It's okay to tell another brother that, hey, that haircut look nice you got, bro. Hey, man, that shirt, I like that shirt. Hey, what's that cologne you got on, bro? That don't smell good. Like, it's okay. That's cool. That don't make you lame. That make you real. A human being, a man. It's okay to we done got so damn robotic. All we need to do is laugh and hate on each other and stuff. And nobody shows love. I see 99 posts and it's all everybody laughing at each other, treating each other bad or hate or mad at each other. I never see nobody say, "Man, I love you, bro. Have a good day, bro. I hope you and your family. I hope you make it back home to your family today, bro."
One thing
you got so bad out here, you even compliment somebody, they gonna take it as a diss.
Man,
that's how bad.
Yeah, you'll mess around and get beat up. You'll mess around and get beat up trying to compliment somebody out here.
Yeah, we've gotten into a dangerous place.
Like, yo, why you shut my
eyes,
nigga?
But when we look at the level of petty that's been going on in the past few years, 10 years of the game, and going back 25 years. It wasn't always like this. There was always going to be criticisms, beefs between people. That's just the human nature because not everybody's going to like everybody they come in contact with. And I preface this by saying I'm not down in social media. Social media has been kick ass for us. It's helped us to do what we've done with this show. You know,
it helped my career too.
Yeah, but what's happened now is we've seen a element of it where we've seen a proliferation of negativity that has spun out of control online and is transferring to people because people have to understand whatever your diet is, and it's not just about what you eat.
Yep.
It's about what you watch. It's about what you
yep,
do.
Yep.
It's the habits
you consume.
You develop.
What go in your body.
Yes,
yep.
Exactly. Exactly.
Consuming is information. It's not just food.
Mm-hmm. And that is something that I think we really have to understand. Social media now has become a place where, if not used responsibly, it is going to be the cause of death. The coroner reports on communications is clout chasing. And that's where you're toe-tagged by technology.
Yep.
Because people have to understand this. Everything online, number one, When we see a lot of these artists out here who talk about how much money they got or how many bodies they caught, how much weight they done pushed up, being a bodybuilder on the brick, a lot of this bullshit.
Might be lying.
Man.
They lying.
Yeah.
I work with a lot of these guys.
Yeah. But you got people that they broadcast to who believe it, and then they follow suit behind
yep.
it thinking that that's a genuine
yep.
article when it's nothing but counterfeit. You know, paper.
Yep. Yep.
You are in it. You're heavy in the industry. You're major
yep.
in this. What did you learn? And obviously, we're not going to ask any names. We don't do that on Off the Cuff Radio. We're about
truth and
understanding, but we're never going to be out to just roast somebody. Or dig deep like certain other people. Yeah. we off that. But what have you learned in the industry about people in terms of what they try to portray themselves to be and how you know them in real life and how they've gotten themselves in situations because of what they tried to portray that wasn't genuine?
Man, I don't even know where to start with that situation. Like, I've seen this happen countless times. It could go bad in so many ways. Like, I've seen guys that, like, what a lot of people don't understand is the power of your tongue, right? The power of tongue.
Mm.
The stuff you say and speak is going to turn into real life eventually. So if you're always talking about bad stuff and harming people and stuff and you know, shoot them up, bang, bang, gang stuff, you can't be surprised when that tongue circles back. This is why you should talk about positive things and love and finance and wealth and generational wealth and stuff, because that tongue is very powerful. I've seen friends of mine that were, you know, weren't even freaking gang affiliated and affiliated like that, but they talked about it so much in the records and stuff that it actually came back to haunt them in real life and stuff. And it's crazy because I know these people, it's like, you're not even like that. Like, you just, it was a facade, you know, trying to make records and stuff and make money. And you can't play with stuff out here. Like, I never, that's one thing I never did, was like try to be something that I know I'm not. I'm not a thug or a gangbanger or none of that. I'm a smart businessman. I'm a woke. I'm a child of the Most High. I'm a lot of things, but I never try to play gangster, you know. Now, I will fucking beat niggas up if I got to and shit, but that's not a gangster. That's just how it was in the 90s when I grew up. If you grew up in the 90s like me, you know that, you know, we just fought and stuff. It wasn't that big of a deal like it is now. Now it's the end of the world if somebody fights. It wasn't that big of a deal in the 90s. You just got your knot on your head, you went home, put some ice on it, and went back to school the next day.
What do you think it started
saying? I think it's also a case of people are prepped for a possible humiliation, because back then when we went those stages, we didn't have a lot of these cameras.
Yeah.
Have a lot of
I agree with that.
Yeah, if you got beat up in your own school or your own street.
Yep, yep. You
only
everybody saw it was the motherfuckers on your. Yep, that's it. Nobody in the world saw it. If you didn't catch it that day, it didn't even happen. You mess around and stay home from school a day or two and get the swelling down, you good.
Yeah.
Now, catch the piece, man. You got niggas in UK commenting on you getting your ass beat.
Bro, and then that's the thing is, it's there forever. It's there forever. You can't go back like next year. Like you could get beat up. Back in the day, you could get beat up, and then a month later, niggas would forget because somebody else got beat up. Now, I can just go play the video of you getting beat up again if I want to laugh at you or humiliate you and stuff. And, you know, it's like we were talking about earlier with the social media thing. Like, it's crazy how these conversations keep tying back into the same thing. I think we're on to something, guys.
Yeah. And I think because of where we saw,
You might have to come back on Facebook for at least a week. We got to make them mad again.
Man, I'll be thinking about it, bro. I'm going to be real. Like, look, I got Instagram, but I don't fuck with no Instagram people because they ain't real people. They all like industry people on Facebook. Facebook got the real people, like people that know you like in real life. Like Instagram, them people don't know you in real life. They just be like, it's like some weirdo stuff going on there. Like Facebook is where the organic, real people in your neighborhood or went to high school with you at and stuff.
Everybody on Instagram, for the most part, they try to be influencers and celebrities.
Yeah, they too good to do. Like, that's one thing I like about Facebook. It's still regular people on there. Like, everybody ain't, like, it's weirdo stuff on there too, but everybody on Facebook is still kind of normal. They got normal jobs. They're doing normal stuff. You know, they got normal families and stuff. Everybody on Instagram is like a freaking influencer, like you said. Them got played out. I don't want to see anybody else live a luxury life. I'm tired of saying, I want to see people that live regular. Like, where the people that got to wash clothes and got to go to the grocery store. Like, I'm tired of everybody going out to eat and living these lush lifestyles and stuff. Like, I want to see regular people, man.
They got to put on their Halloween on.
Yeah. Like, what you doing? What you watch? What TV show you watch before you go to sleep? Like, I want to know regular. I think, me and my wife talk about this a lot, but I think America and the world and the culture, I think it's begging for somebody regular to come around. If the industry is smart, they would bring out a regular fucking rapper right now. Like, somebody that's, like, just extremely humble and regular. Not one of these guys with the big chains, but just bring a regular, humble dude out, and I think he would probably be super successful right now. People are tired of the pompous energy, you know, that most of these celebrities got. I know I am, at least, you know. Maybe it's just me, but I'm a little over it.
No.
Like, I would pay to see regular.
Yo, what's crazy? And what's crazy is this, though, man, is a lot of the regular dudes are the ones doing the units. Like, you got J. Cole, Kendrick Lamar.
Yep.
I would even throw Eminem out there, you know what I mean? Because
yep.
Based on what
yep.
he rap about.
We could even,
yep. Nah, Eminem regular. Rock, he do Eminem do regular stuff. He just be chilling. He don't do extra stuff. He regular. I mean, he's a superstar, but he carry himself like a regular person.
That's what I like to see. Nas and Cormega, we know what Nas did. But Nas, when you see him, he's just a regular guy.
Look, don't get me wrong. I love the big celebrities, but I think the industry has too many big celebrities. I think somebody needs to just be a regular. I think if somebody be a regular, like the appeal to the regular people, they'll be extremely successful. I believe we should have some mega superstars. We need them, but I don't think everybody should be a mega superstar. We need some regular stars, you know? Like in the 90s, you had big stars, you had medium stars, but everybody was eating them.
Yeah. But this
now everybody's just a superstar now.
Yeah. But, you know, this is where the trap comes in, y'all, because when we look at how it has changed, the rarefied air of celebrity has pretty much been taken down to the limbo level where everybody can get under the bar and go through it. The 90s was an element of mystique, a hardworking ascent, and then success that came from it. You really, really had to go through the gauntlet to really get to where you were at. So in the 90s, we saw such a huge success. Not everybody made it. But like you said, everybody who was dope, you know, even if you had, you know, even if you didn't necessarily make it to the next level, you still were able to get your songs out. You were able to get your video played and people rocked with you. You found your audience organically. What we're seeing now is in social media, it has become an express lane of entertainment for people to find their fame by any means necessary. And that's not always a good thing. Because we have found that a lot of people over the years, they are not prepared for it. A lot of people think they're ready for the celebrity of flashing lights and runway sway. But then they find out what it entails, and we see people who self-destruct under it because they're under that microscope, and they really don't understand what that means. The biggest thing you sacrifice being famous is anonymity, because you're not an unknown. Everybody knows who you are. You're public property. And a lot of people think that that's cool until it's not. And it's something that I think people have to understand. We've gotten lost as a collective to thinking that regular is bad. No, regular is pretty cool. I mean,
I know, right?
Yeah. But it's gotten so crazy now that we got young kids talking about they want to grow up to be professional YouTubers and TikTokers because they think they're going to get paid off this.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's not a career. But, you know, for the youth,
it's
they
a
think
backup
that that's what
I, like, with me, I'm going to be honest with you. Like, how I'm trying to raise my kids, bro.
Mm-hmm.
I want my kids to do something not entertainment industry job first. Like, I want them to, and it ain't even got to be a go-to-school job either, you know? Like, it's I want something different, though.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is, but I want something different. You could go say, shoot, I want to be a freaking archaeologist. I don't know. Try something different, though. We're going to try something. I ain't going to say I'm going to make my kids, but I'm definitely pushing my kids to try different things besides the normal thing that we've all, you know, been told to do in the culture. You know, you're either going to rap or you're going to be an athlete and stuff, or you know, I want a doctor or a lawyer. I want to try to push for something completely different off the wall. Because there's so many career choices out here that you could actually pick, man, that will make you, like you said, it's nothing wrong being regular. I know people that work at Walmart that are homeowners. So, like, you don't have to have this superstar job to freaking get, you know, wealth or be a homeowner. Because at the end of the day, that's, you know, the end goal is to obtain some wealth, own property and stuff. That's that quote-unquote American dream. But you don't have to be a famous TikToker to do that or an NFL player to do that. You can do that with a Walmart job. Like, two people with a Walmart job can go get a freaking house, a decent house. Like, that's not, like, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like, you're living literally the American dream. You're living the, you know, it's a little bit different now with the economy and stuff, but, you know, a year or two ago, this would have been really freaking good, but I don't understand. I don't think that anybody's really broke it down to this younger generation that they could be successful without being an entertainer. Like, I don't think they really understand what success is. I think they need some grown men or women to let them know, like, look, you don't have to spend 20, 30 years chasing something. You can go get a regular career and still be a homeowner. Half of these rappers ain't even homeowners. Like, you could go do that just working at Walmart, dude. And it's even the same with some of these record deals and stuff. You're talking about all you got to do is work on your credit and get good credit and go get a loan from the bank. That's what the record deals basically are. They're bank loans.
Yep.
Like, why is nobody educating? Yeah, not real talk. Like, you, this literally free game. Like, you get out of fresh out of high school 18, don't mess your credit up. Don't go buy no cell phones. Don't go get no car on your credit, none of that shit. Keep your credit clean. Don't go get no student loans, none of that shit. Go get a job. Go link up with a female or a homeboy that got a job. Y'all put y'all two jobs there together. Get a freaking property. Sell it. Rent it out.
Yeah.
Staying together, whatever y'all want to do. I wish I would have known this at 21. You know what I'm saying? I'd be like 7 properties up by now. But, you know, if you... Yeah, this is stuff
that
they don't...
Yeah, but that's all facts, though, and it's all facts, no cap, because we have to, especially with our young, you know, our young children out here, we got to tell them, because when they say, you know, when it's so pushed on them to be athletes and entertainers, to me, that limits their genius. It puts them in a box trying to wrap them in other people's expectations to where historically black genius is multifaceted, it is expansive, it is excellence personified, it is diverse, it is panoramic, it is not limited, it is endless. We want our kids to know that there is no status quo on what constitutes blackness. Black is who you are. That is your lineage. It is royal. It is regal. It is established. It is respected. It is distinguished. And nobody can put a qualifier on what your profession is as long as it is honorable and pays the bills. Aspire to something that makes you happy and not for the entertainment or critique of others, because at the end of the day, you got to take care of yourself, and go ahead, please.
My bad, but I'm gonna add right on to that too, because I know somebody might be hearing this like, nah, man, fuck that, I want to be a rapper. Look, you can still be a rapper. Take the plan that I'm telling you to do with a property. Then when you sell that motherfucker, you're gonna be up $80,000 or $100,000. Then take that money and put it into your rap career. At 21, you didn't invest, and you ain't even had to get a loan. So now you still got clean credit. You fucking got your profit off your fucking property. Put that into your rap career if that's how you want to rap. And you fucking 21, 20, funding $100,000, $200,000 into your own rap career. If you want to still rap, like.
And I'm a bandwagon off of that too, guys, because there's something King and myself, you know, me and my brother, we've talked about this on air. We've talked about this off air. Know the fucking craft of having what it means to be good at the shit. Because when you look at all the greats, when you look at guys like Lil Jon, who was started off as a local DJ, when you look at Nas, when you look at Rakim, when you look at Jeezy, you know, all of them started at a level of Jeezy, of course, his situation was a little different because obviously we all know the story, so it's not snitching on air because and shout out to CTE, shout out to Ace, Boo Rossini, you know, Jeezy, Snoop 11, all the BMF, you know, Cash, you know, his wife, you know, Erica, the whole crew.
Ain't snitching the story,
you know,
on Netflix.
everybody knows with Snowman, you know, what was going on and how they started the label, him and King. And everybody kept getting killed or locked up, and they was like, well, we need to do this ourselves. And Jeezy went out and just practiced and got good at it. You know, he was telling it from a real perspective, and he learned how to tell the story. And
I worked with Jeezy, too.
Great guy. Next time you see Snowman, man, tell him, you know, Thomas and VA still throwing up the CTE, man, still repping the set,
okay,
man. You know, him and Ace, great guy. Got nothing but love for all of those people, man.
Hey, I was gonna say this too. Is see what's dope about what Beat God's done is like he know how to transition with the times. Like when I first heard him, it was the Lex Luger sound. It was going from the crunk sound to the trap sound with the Lex Luger sound. Later on down the line, you transition, and I lost contact with you for a couple years after.
I got off Facebook.
I guess what it was, they deleted your account, and they probably
put
us in jail. Right.
I deleted that shit because I got tired of just people. I made a promise to myself that next time people saw me, I was going to be signed. The last time I left, I said, when I come back to this motherfucker, I'm going to be signed, I'm going to be successful, and I'm going to have a deal. And I deleted social media for like 3-4 years, all of it. And I went and started working on my craft and just working on being a better person and working on myself. But see, what a lot of people don't understand, everybody spend all this fucking time working on their craft and their music, but nobody work on their self. That is very important to work on yourself and be a good fucking person, because nobody's going to want to deal with you if you're a piece of shit. Period.
That's true.
So you need to, as much as time as you put into your music, nobody talks about this in the music industry. You need to work on yourself. You need to be responsible. You need to be able to come to studios on time. I need to know that I can trust you. I need to know that you're not going to be out there embarrassing my brand and my company and stuff like this. Everybody wants to work on music. Nobody wants to work on themselves. That's one of the reasons I got signed, because when I sat down with these labeling people, they could tell I've been working on myself by how I carry myself and how I talk. Nobody talks like me in the industry for real, because they're not working on themselves. Well, if you work on yourself, you'll be success is going to follow you. No matter what you do, because you know how to treat people kindly. You know how to be humble and shit. I didn't get my money and treat people like shit. I got money and started being nicer to people and started loving people even more and started trying to boost people up even more and lift people up more. Most people in my industry don't do that. They get money and they think they're better than people. I got successful and money, and I actually wanted to be a better person. I'm still like that, man. Like every day. Go ahead.
And you gotta just know how to treat folks, man, because we've seen situations where people, those same people you meet up on the way up are going to be the same people you meet going down. And we've seen a lot of people, they've come down and they never got back up there again. For your ascent, what was it like in terms, what's, for somebody listening out there, what is the operations in terms of how you get a meeting with these labels, how the negotiations go, how budgets are discussed, how contracts are structured, you know, all of that. We still got time to run with it.
I mean, as far as getting in the, it's easy to get in the label rooms now, to be honest with you. And it sounds cliche, but you just need a hot record, bro. And some catchy, some hot. You got some catchy, some hot. Get online, start looking in the A&Rs and what labels they work for and shit. Follow the A&Rs. But you need a record, though. And it need to be hot, not no garbage ass shit. Like, you need to be really hot. So it ain't even got to be, like, fire. It need to be, it could be lame. You know, the industry got lame songs. Like, it ain't got to be, like, no fucking, I can't tell you how to make the song, but it need to be something that people would dance to or bob to, or, you know. If you got a following, they'll find you. If you got a record that's buzzing, they'll find you. And even if you got a dope record that ain't buzzing, ain't nobody heard. Get hop in the. This is one good thing that Instagram is for, is contacting A&Rs in the music industry. I got a lot of situations through Instagram, working with different A&Rs and stuff. So work with A&Rs and stuff. From as far as the way the deals are structured and the, like, where you want to know, like, as far as the beat side, like, me selling a beat to a label or me working a whole record deal with a label? Which one would you be interested in knowing about?
Just say making a beat.
Right.
Making a beat.
Because what comes with beats is you got to look at production credits, songwriter credits. A lot of that goes in line with that.
Well, how I do my shit, man, I'm going to be real. Like, I've been... I've been put in a fortunate situation in my career, and I like to help people around me. So, like, what we started doing, I learned this from my bro, London. My boy, London Jake. Shout out to London. But, like, we share all our shit, bro, to be real. So it's like, okay, I make the beat. Y'all two, you'll be a writer, right? Say me and Aaron producers, and you the writer. So I'll go to the studio, we'll play the beat, you'll write the song on it, and we'll go get it to, let's just say, Gucci Man, for instance. Gucci Man and Atlanta Records want to buy the record from us for $30,000, $40,000. I mean, realistically, legally how it goes as a producer, I'm the only one to get it in advance. Like, as a producer, like, and everybody in the industry know this. I'm not saying no foreign language. So if we would go to Gucci Man, he wouldn't give up $40,000 for the beat. I would get the $40,000, to be honest with you. They come straight to the producer because I own the master copy of the original. You feel me? It's no master without the beat. The beat, when I hand you this physical CD, this is the original master copy. There's no master without a beat. So you have to buy the master from me. If that makes sense, this is why the producer, people don't understand why the producer, I didn't understand for the longest why producers get paid and the writers didn't get paid. It's because the producer has a physical master to deliver
to
the studio.
He's got the music.
He makes the physical, it's no studio session without that shit, without that original master, you know. If I hadn't brought that MP3 to the studio, it wouldn't be no session. Now, I guess that's how the industry figures it. Now, I'm not saying that I think that's fair or not. It's not my place, but this is how the industry operates, so. I'll take the $40,000, and the writers will get, like, a bigger percentage, a royalty percentage, because they wrote the song. They'll get, like, a bigger royalty percentage than me, but I'll get the advance on the money. But how we started doing our shit, because I didn't think that was fair, because these guys would be in the studio writing the song with me and shit, you know, putting it together. They're working behind the scenes to get it to big artists and shit, too. They team working and shit, too. So how we started doing it now is we don't give a fuck who did what. We split everything down the middle. So if it's three of us in the studio, we're going to split that shit 33% for everybody. So you'll get 33% of the $40,000. You'll get 33%. You'll get 33%. And that's how we've been doing it. And we just, ever since then, that's how I've been doing all my records. But that's something that I'm only doing. A lot of people are not doing that because they legally don't have to. It's just something that I do because, like I said, I'm a good person. I give a fuck about my writers making money and the people I work with making money, because if they not eating, why would they want to work with me more and make more records, you know? I look at it like, if I keep them happy, they'll keep making records and we'll keep fucking doing this shit, you know? Instead of me just taking all the money, being greedy, getting a one-time lick, why not just split this shit? We could just keep doing this shit for 20 years.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you guys want to get more placements, I just gave y'all free fucking game, producers. I don't know if y'all listening to this shit. Split. If you want to get a fucking placement, send your beats to one of these big producers. Tell the niggas you're going to get them fucking 25% of the publishing on that shit, and watch how quick they get your record goddamn placed somewhere. I gave you free game how to get a placement. Real shit. Like, you got to share in this business. Like, that's just how it is. This is the nature of the business. Ain't nobody walking away with 100% of shit. Not Jay-Z, not Beyonce, nobody. Everybody in this industry got to share. Jay-Z and Beyonce, everybody got to share.
Yeah, everybody, and the thing is, everybody works hand in hand because it takes everybody to make the shit hot. And that's the bro code of the bank in terms of how business is brokered, because everybody, it's a team effort. And sometimes we see in this game with people, we're not going to say no names, about how contracts have not always been the best, how people just basically took the money and didn't pay nobody, got an advance, and was like, fuck everybody else. and you see that a lot of the game,
I
know stories. We're not going to put that on air, of course, but let's talk about some of those collaborations in terms of how they came together. Obviously, there has to be chemistry. The Nicki Minaj situation, how did that come to pass in terms of, you know, you and her getting together to make that track?
Man, my boy Lenny, well, actually, how it went down was we did a record for Bia. We produced her record, Whole Lot of Money, her biggest single that she got. And Nicki Minaj contacted us at Sony to want to do a feature on it, because her and Bia had been trying to work with Nicki Minaj. So I guess Nicki Minaj seen this would be a good time to actually work. She got a good record, you know, popping. I could get on this record and get it even hotter for her and shit. Shout out to Nicki. for getting on the record and really taking it to the next level for us. It was doing good, but when Nikki got on it, it took it to a different level. So, yeah, pretty much we cut the record for Bia. Me, Romano, London J, we cut the record for Bia. Sonny got it over to Nikki, and Nikki loved it, and she freaking jumped on it and killed it. The rest was history after that. Like, Sonny kind of put that play in motion. Like, we put the record together with Bia, and Nikki jumped on the remix. Her and Bia and Sonny kind of put the play with Nikki together. But nonetheless, it worked out great for me. So it's 6 times platinum now. So, yeah.
Mm. Then we go hand in hand with the JoJo record. That showed a little bit more of the diversity.
Yeah, I do a lot of stuff like that, but nobody knows because the industry isn't really R&B and pop culture no more, which I wish it would get back to R&B because I do a shit ton of R&B, and it's really good R&B, but it just don't really sell no more in the hip-hop community. It used to be, when I first started and stuff, R&B was like, was a popping genre to get in, like that Bryson Tiller, that R&B rappish type sound. It kind of done died down, though. I don't know why. Bryson Tiller was crazy hard. Like, that sound, his whole sound was crazy. Like, they need to bring that R&B back.
They call it a trapping soul.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, that trapping soul, like, all that type of R&B. I don't know why. August Alsina, you know, a lot of guys look dope as crap. Like,
I mean, honestly, the only guy that's really doing it now is Tory Lanez. Like, he's trying.
Chris Brown, hey. Chris, he's like in the middle of a rapper and an R&B singer.
Right.
I got records with Tory too. Me and Tory did some shit not too long ago too. Tory, my bro. I fuck with Tory.
Yeah.
I be doing so many records for people. I be forgetting. I literally forgot me and Tory did a record. Like, that's how many records I be doing. Like, I just make them, and like, I literally, it's like I set it and forget it and go to the next one. You know what I'm saying? And, you
what's
can't
the
get
creative
stuck
process
on one.
Like for you?
To be honest, man, I'm extremely creative when it comes to music. Like, the world ain't even heard half of the sounds that I got. I make EDM, pop, reggae, Afro pop, film score music, nursery rhyme music for kids. Like, it's like, it's, but it, like I said, the hip-hop culture, I ain't gonna say it's a culture that's limited in it, but it's just not, a lot of that stuff just don't fit into, you know, rap culture. But the process of making music is, I don't know, like, I don't got a process, I just do what I feel. And it's cool because I don't, like, listen to a lot of music, like, modern music. I listen to old school music and, like, old school R&B, 70s shit, Marvin Gaye, that, or 90s shit, or early 2000s. I don't listen to a lot of the modern music. I listen to it sometimes and shit, but I don't, like, overly listen to it because I don't want it to influence myself. This is how I've been able to be successful, because I don't sound, you know, per se, like everybody else at the time. You know, like, I don't listen to a lot of music. So I used to listen to a lot of music before, and that's when I was trying to sound like your freaking Southside. No disrespect to them, but I didn't have my own sound. I was trying to sound like them. Stop listening to music as much and just started making the shit that I thought was good, that I liked. That's when I started getting hits and records and shit. Like, you know, they don't need another Southside. They already got one. They don't need another Lex Luger. They already got one. They don't need another, Dr. Dre. They already got one. You could take stuff from all these people don't build and make your own sound, though. Like, but, yeah, listen to a lot of music or have you copycat a lot of music. So be careful of just overly listening to music, you know. Like, if you make rap, listen to alternative music. If you make country music, go listen to fucking reggae music, just so you can have a difference, so you don't be so influenced by what you're in, and you could create what you really want to create, not create what you're hearing, you know, being created.
Yeah, and I think that's something a lot of artists have to understand, because when you're in album mode or song mode, you want it to flow organically in terms of your vision. And a lot of times when you're making music, you want something that's different from what everybody else is doing. Like you said, I think that's the difference now because we're all older. So we grew up in a time where the radio was not as oversaturated because we listened to everything. You know, we heard variety. This is before payola. Yeah, I said it. This is before payola came into the game. You know, so it's
that's what's going on now.
Yeah, you know, and it's a situation where it's gotten difficult. Like, I haven't listened. I'll be honest, I haven't listened to the because I listen to heavy metal, classical, hip hop, jazz. You know, so it's like, but in terms of hip hop radio, I haven't listened to hip hop radio, soul radio, seriously in over 15 years. It just,
bro.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna lie to you, dog. I had like the number one song on the radio, and I didn't even listen to the radio. Like, and that's another thing too that a lot of people need to understand. You don't have to be so embedded in this shit to be successful in it. I completely didn't listen to anything on the radio or why I had the number one song on the radio. I just didn't give a shit. I wanted to make what I wanted to make and stuff. And, you know, you don't have to, because this is what everybody else is doing. Do it. That is what we're trying to tell y'all. Like, do what you want to do. Listen to what you want to listen to. Just be make something good in quality. If it's good in quality, you're going to do what it's supposed to do.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about when you hit that first number one record. What was that like? Tell us about the process in terms of the creation and then when you found out how it actually hit number one.
The creation was my first, like, big number one was that Nicki Minaj and Bia. Like, we talking about, like, number one in the world type record. Like, that thing was
crazy.
But I've had previous number ones. Like, the JoJo went number one, but it went number one alternative pop lane. The Nicki Minaj features, that one went number one in like every country, every genre, every statistic. Is it's pretty surreal, to be honest with you. Like, when it first happened and stuff, it's pretty surreal. Like, damn, I finally made it. I think I actually shed a tear when I first got my first real number one.
That's
like, wow, like,
you should be happy.
Yeah, like, it's like I literally worked my whole life away to freaking, I think it just felt good to know that, like, I could accomplish something that I want to accomplish if I stick to it. Like, it's no different with somebody get their master's degree or a bachelor's degree, you know. It's that same sense of, damn, I set out to do something, and I actually fucking did it. I didn't know that I was going to do it. I just started doing shit and just see what works, you know. You just start doing stuff, then eventually something works. Yeah, I think that was it's a real point, you know, just that, damn, I finally did it. After all these years, I was right about myself. I believed in myself all these years ago, and I was freaking right. That let me know that moving forward, I'm going to trust myself more. I'm going to trust my instinct more, you know? It built my self-trust up. When you actually say you're going to do something and go out and achieve it, like, that's a self like I said when we first got on, like, that's something you take with other businesses and throughout your other careers and stuff that you could set out and do something and accomplish it.
Now, and that's always important because, you know, like we said, you never know what's going to happen, but you got to just get out there and do it. And, you know, you just put your best foot forward and you hope that people rock with it. And from there, you are able to make something great. So we got to talk about
the other side of it.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, there's no gratifying feeling than knowing that your vision that you share with the world, everybody sees it through your lens in terms of what you wanted them to see and how they're able to feel it without the braille. But they see
most
it
importantly,
and really
though,
it's something tangible. Yeah.
Make sure that you make what you like and hope that the rest of the world likes it. That's the key. Like, don't make what everybody else and make what you like and hope that the rest of the world loves it too. And until then, just keep making what you like until they love it, until they like your style.
That part right
there. That's very important, to do what you like, man.
And we got to get into this too, financial literacy. Obviously, you've been successful with this. We've seen artists over the years in terms of tax troubles, in terms of losing stuff, obviously Uncle Sam is going to get his cut of it in terms – what do artists have to understand most in terms of when they sign their deals and when they do start having a little bit of excess money where they can spend, but also making sure that they are investing and saving that money and not trying to buy up everything because they can?
Man, right now, with the way this economy is, I would recommend, motherfucker, don't spend nothing. Just hold that shit right now. Ain't shit safe right now. And that's just being honest. Not real estate, not gold, not stock, not crypto. I would just hold hard cash right now and just wait a little bit. If you got cash right now, which most people don't, but if I got cash right now, I'm chilling in cash and just waiting for the right buying opportunities. And they ain't yet. I think shit's going down a lot lower. I don't think we done yet in America. Financial literacy. Normally, if this climate wouldn't be like it was, I would tell people to invest in gold, invest in real estate, into property and real estate. But this climate kind of silly right now, so I don't feel comfortable really making that recommendation. Honestly, like it's the way these rates are for property and the way they gold and silver and crypto and stocks, everything is up and down and shit. Like just chilling cash. That shit ain't going up and down. It's staying where it's at. You ain't making nothing, but you ain't losing shit either, you know? That's what I would do right now. But if it wasn't this climate, like I said, I'd invest in gold and I'd invest in real estate. And, of course, you know, you got to pay your taxes. You got to fucking don't be stupid with your money. Jewelry, I don't invest in jewelry, me personally. I don't knock nobody else, but it just, like, one thing with me, I set my career where I'm not flashy. I don't want to be flashy because it costs too much to be flashy. You feel me? Once you start doing that shit, you got to keep doing it. Once you go buy $1,000 pair of shoes, you got to buy $1,000 pair of shoes forever now because niggas going to say you fell off, you know. But if you just be regular like me, nigga, I go to Target and get some pants and a shirt. Or fucking, you know, I'm a simple dude. Marshalls, you know.
You got to shout out Ross.
Yeah, Ross too. Like, you if you live like that, though. It ain't, like, it's easy because, like, these dudes, they like I said, a lot of my friends, they got $1,000 jeans, $1,000 shoes and shit, and I would never do that shit, bro. And I got more money and more successful than these guys, and I still would never do it. I don't get why they do it. But to me, you give me the Target outfit or the Ross outfit, and I'm going to rock that bitch out and make it look good, you know, unless I got somewhere fancy to go, you know, by all means. But, yeah, don't spend your money on stupid shit. Don't spend your money trying to look nice. I mean, look nice. It don't take a lot of money to look nice stuff. Like, I'm from the 90s where we did regular shit. We fucking put on a collar shirt. We had some nice shoes and some regular pants. You call it a day. You was the one that made the shit nice. We ain't had to spend a lot of money on clothes and shit because we was the fucking, was the swag. Like, it was your personality and shit. These niggas trying to buy all this shit because they ain't got no personality. All they can talk about is money.
Yeah, which goes and it goes back to the true artistry of the music, because when you really, really have something more, because there's a deeper depth outside of the material, because the material doesn't make the individual, the intellect is the individual and the knowledge that comes from that. I think that's why we see a lot of these acts over the years who they had a big jump at first, but they didn't really have any other substance outside of it. That's why you see the Nas, the J. Cole, even with Griselda from the street side of it. But Griselda, you know, shout out to Benny Westside, you know, Conway.
I was working on some shit with Benny too.
Say what? Dude,
yep,
you need to tell us about how this happened. We need to know about this. We need to know about this.
Yeah,
you can tell
them. I can't talk a lot about it, but just some of my people from Sony, I didn't, like, personally meet up with him, but some of my people from Sony, I sent them some beats they were looking for, and he was fucking with one of them.
Okay. Look, shout out to
Buffalo,
Benny, the Buffalo crew.
Benny was making a lot of moves in the Atlanta for a while. I think he lived in Atlanta.
Yeah. Actually, that's what my guy told me. That's how it got to fruition. Like, I didn't even expect it. Like, they hit me with it out of the blue. He's like, yo, I can hear Benny on this. He with me right now. I was like, what? Shit, make it happen. You don't talk about it.
But
don't tell me about it.
Yeah, I mean, but it's all about real skills on the microphone. And at the end of the day, that's what's really going to be the selling point. You know, a lot of people say hip-hop is dead, and I'm like, no, it's not. You know, it's about artists. You know, I mean, we still got people doing it at a high level. You know, E-40 still doing it at a high level. Nas still doing it. Cormega's still doing it. You know, it's the game is fine in terms of people. When you look at Atlanta right now in terms of the independent artists, you know, like Guitar Gabby, shout out to her, you know, in the Texas Lips, so many others. Who do you see independently in Atlanta who's really catching your eye that they really, really are doing something big out there?
Well, I ain't going to say so much as, like, for Atlanta, but I know I like the new chick, Glorilla. Like, she pretty hard, like. Like, I like her shit.
Out of the Memphis.
Man, I'm going to be 100, man. I'm going to be all the way 100 about this. I think Atlanta might be finna lose. They spot to Memphis when it comes to the music. Like, Memphis, they ain't fucking around. And it looked like they finally coming together and getting some unity back together and shit. So, yeah, Memphis a problem when it come on that music scene. They always been a problem. Nobody just didn't know. I've been new. This is why I worked with Memphis for so long, but... yeah, Memphis is a problem.
Yeah.
They're a problem for Atlanta when it comes to music.
Yeah. I think the video resonated, you know, when she did FNF because obviously it had that ratchet energy, you know, that chicks really love. But it was also a situation, it wasn't a over the top glamorous video. It was just the chick with her homegirls, and they were just having fun shooting it. You know, she got the swag, she got the attitude, and the music is the most important, like you said, you know, Beats. It's like, it resonated with an audience. And that's, matter of fact, she was out here a couple months ago. I'm out here in Hampton Roads, Virginia. She was at a club out here, Lido Inn, you know, and, you know, I mean, the song was such a hit. Like, I think she ended up performing the shit like 5 times. I mean, it was just...
it's got like that. It's got like kind of like that old crime mob, Nuck If You Buck type energy to me. Like, like that type. I think that era wasn't, it didn't get long. It didn't get live long enough. That was around that Lil Jon Crunk era and shit. Like, it was too quick. Yeah. They should have kept that Crunk beat around a little bit long. A few more years.
Yeah, but I mean, you figure from 2001 when Bia Bia came out, you know, with Lil Jon, you know, when that first hit, because you figure, you could argue that probably from 2001 to 2008-ish, we got about a good 7 years of it. I mean, you had Crime Mob, you had Franchise Boys, you had the Shop Boys during that time. I mean, you know, Jeezy came, you know, Jeezy dropped 101 in 2005, you know, and that, even with a bootleg, that record fucking just exploded. I mean, you had Jim Jones with Ballin'. You know, there was, what you said, what you said, Beats, it makes sense because it's hard to believe, you know, how fast, like you said, how fast that era seemed to go, that in earnest, that's almost going back 20 years. That's going back 20 years. And with Glorilla, what she did, she kind of brought back that nostalgia energy of what really, really made it hit at that time. It's crazy that it is to say, but, you know, she, you know, and we tell the youngins today, because we're older, we're not old, and we're still very much involved in love the culture. When we look at the videos, when we look at the music, when goddamn DJ Drama got fucking hit for that mixtape shit back in the day, you know, man, GZ, my nigga was right. He said that shit is going to hurt the industry, and he was right.
It did.
I mean,
it did.
You know, because it's like, it didn't stop artists from putting out, it stopped DJs from getting a mix of artists on one project to really get everybody out there. Now the artists have to really put it out themselves, where a DJ could really kind of put you on with it. And I'm running with it here, but it's like, I tell the youngest today, you just had to have understood that early 90s
late 90s, early 90s mixtape energy in terms of the air was different, the feel of
I mean, like you, these niggas, it was so much music getting dropped at one point that it was crazy. You couldn't even keep up with it. Like now these dudes drop music like one or two songs a year and shit. Like them niggas was dropping mixtapes like, it was crazy. Yeah. It's crazy, for real.
That's a fight for the throne, man. You had T.I., Jeezy, Gucci.
Like, hell, Lil Wayne was dropping.
All four of them.
That nigga dropped 60 mixtapes in a year back in the day. It's like around dropped 60 in 1 year for real. Like, you, like, damn.
You talking about Gucci?
Yep.
Nah, Wayne. Yeah, but.
I'm talking about Wayne.
You know,
but Gucci too? Shit.
Oh, Wayne.
Yeah. I was talking about Wayne, but Gucci did the same shit too.
But that Southern movement back in the friggin' in the mid-2000s, you know, and I got respect for both of them. Even though I rock with Jeezy and the boys all day, but to watch Gucci in terms of what he did with his come up, I mean, you figure both of them, I mean, they, you know, what Gucci did with DJ Burn One, you know, I mean, of course, what Jeezy did with DJ Drama with Trap or Die, you know, of course.
That was one of the best mixtapes to me ever, that Jeezy Trap or Die. I always say that.
Man.
Like, people don't understand how good that mixtape was. Like, they really don't.
That
like.
Ooh,
that
was right. Like,
Trap or Die was just.
That would hit hard as people work, man.
Yeah, just
that was
I tell people
that,
man. It's like think of 50 Cent when he we Get Rich or Die Try, how New York felt. It was the same thing in the South.
Yep, it was the same thing.
And
that's
what Trap or Die was.
Yep, I agree.
Die,
same thing.
I'm like,
I was like, what? Hold on, who? And back when I had a box Chevy with the rims on it and shit, and 12s in the back.
And when he dropped 101, because people forget that when his first album, you know, when he for the street niggas, they already gonna know that Heart of White. Everybody know what I'm talking about with his first album,
yes,
you know. But it's like, but when he dropped 101, man, that was just, you know, I mean, 101 literally revolutionized. B.I. gave it the name in terms of trap music, of course.
Trap music, but Jeezy gave it the sound, though.
Exactly. I mean, he took it to a whole nother level.
I could agree
with that.
I agree with that. A lot of people don't agree with me on that in Georgia, but, like, you know, I know I've been doing this music my whole life, but Jeezy definitely, he changed the sound of trap music. And Gucci changed the sound, too, but he changed it different than Jeezy changed it. Like, Jeezy shit was different when it came, like, I ain't gonna lie, like, that was back in the time when niggas in Georgia, we really out here doing that shit. Like, it was plenty of stuff out here, like, work out here in the streets from them boys and shit. Like, I noticed personally, like, we used to see a lot of this shit that them boys was talking about back then. Like, it would come down the pipeline to, not saying too much, it was real. Like, it wasn't just a rap shit. Like, I think that's what was different about it. It was real. And everybody knew it was real.
Now, you were in Atlanta during that time, and if not living there, you were right in the middle of it. You say you lived there. How long you been in Atlanta now?
10 years, I'm thinking.
Okay, so all
10
right.
Years.
Okay, so all right, 10 years. So you were pretty much, even if you weren't living there, you were around it. Of course, Jeezy dropped Shot with Me, you know, the Softer White, you know, that I was talking about earlier. BMF was heavy back then. In terms of what they had on the streets at that time, shout out to Cyrus, like I said, Cash, Erica, the whole Black Flag crew. What was that like watching that movement down there? Obviously, you know, 50 has a TV show going on right now, basically chronicling the rise of it from Detroit. I know in later seasons he's going to get to the Atlanta element of it, and Jeezy's got to be mentioned in it. But what was that like to watch that movement in terms of just, because basically DMF is kind of known for ushering in that bling era, the new wave bling era in Atlanta.
They did.
You know, with Meech. What was that movement like to watch Southwest and Meech and just the whole crew just come in there and just like basically turn the city upside down on all types of just wildness?
They made a problem. They made a problem in Atlanta because it was – they really had fucked the game up, if you want to be honest, like, because they had their own money. So it's like they – I'm going to be real. Thank you to BMF and now them niggas now I think about it, because that's when they started giving out record deals like crazy in Atlanta after them niggas, because they seen that niggas didn't need these record labels and it's niggas out here got their own money. So the record label was like,
right.
Holy shit, we got to catch up. They started dishing these deals out like crazy in Atlanta. Now I think about it. That's exactly when deals started coming out and they started cutting the checks and shit because they were scared that the street motherfuckers was going to just buy all these niggas up and they'll just pretty much have the whole goddamn, you know, the whole industry they sell. Because they didn't need the record label money and shit. They actually changed the game. I didn't even think about that side of it.
That was, you know, the stories we heard, Kings in North Carolina, I'm at Virginia. So from my end of it, I was kind of late on the BMF saga because I didn't really know about them until pretty much the tail end of the run after Meech got hit. After him and Southwest got locked up. And I didn't really know the depth of it until after, like a couple of years when I really went back and researched a lot of it. But, I mean, the stories, dull. I mean, the stories that were I heard about, I mean, the parties Meech threw, I mean, I mean, just the cars. I mean, these guys would be like 25 cars deep. Yeah, Tiger's in his birthday party, you know, for his, like, the party he had, where he had the tiger, the cage, and the ice sculpture. I mean, the painted girls. I mean, them niggas on the daily just going to a club any night, and you see 25 cars of nothing but exotics, Ferraris, Bentleys, Rolls Royces, Lamborghinis, Mercedes. I mean, it was, like, literally just ostentatiousness on steroids and these dudes blowing, go to Magic City, Blue Flame Lounge, blow 300,000 in the club. I mean, would you say that pretty much for what they did, it just boosted the profile more in terms of giving Atlanta that, not that Atlanta was dying, but it kind of reinvigorated what was already a vibrant lifestyle in the city in terms of the party?
It was dying out, actually, before the niggas came. It actually was. Like, I mean, Outkast and everybody had their run and shit, but that shit kind of dried up, just being real. Like, I mean, T.I., his shit was popping, but it wasn't enough. It didn't. The thing was, like, his music was good, but that shit that got Atlanta bad popping was the street cred and shit. And the street cred came from that, the BMF-type movement, you know? Like, I will say, though, niggas in Georgia should have been doing, like, I didn't know back then, because I'm a little bit younger than them niggas. So we used to get, like, work and shit that would touch down, and it was, like, a lot. Like, and it'd be so freaking frequent. And, like, but I never knew, like, originally where it was coming from and shit until, you know, further on and, you know, throughout. But, yeah, they had shit flooded all over the goddamn place in Georgia. They had shit flooded all over the place in Georgia.
Yes,
they had. They changed the nightlife scene forever, man. Because all of a sudden, all the club promoters, everybody,
they made it
parties like them.
My bad about that guy.
No, you good? You good? Yeah, but I mean, but that was something, like he said, you know, like Meech said, you will never see anything before us. There was none, and after that, you will never see again.
The feds came in and made sure ain't nobody getting no money like that no more. It was too much. It was out of their hands. It was too out of control. They came and cleaned shit up.
Yeah. When we take it back further in terms of pretty much the that 90, because Outkast notably Southern Player listed Cadillac Music was just an unbelievable slice of Southern soul that pretty much kind of dropped on us unexpectedly when it really kind of opened it up for the Atlanta sound in terms of a new wave of it. What did Organized Noise and Outkast collectively do in terms of how they were kind of shaping it for the next wave? Because also, too, you know, there was another, you know, youngin' who, you know, was affiliated with them as well by the name of Davius Wilburn. People know him better than Future. And he was part of that coming up as well. You know, what was that? How big was Outkast for what they would end up influencing for the later generations of the Atlanta hip hop scene, even if there was a bit of a divergent shift from where they had started with it?
I mean, it really wasn't too much of a shift. Like, to be 100, Organized Noise is my favorite producer still. They're the producers who
Shout
I inspired
Brown,
to be like.
Rico Wade, yeah.
Yeah, Rico Wade, that was my boy. Like, he one of the first industry producers that I met, you know, and stuff. And he's pretty much treated me good and, you know, spoke with my sound and stuff and gave me pointers on stuff I needed in, like, 2007, 2008. So, like, yeah, I love Outkast stuff. Organized Noise particularly. I love Outkast. Organized Noise, man, they changed the whole. As far as a producer, if you ain't fucking with Organized Noise as a producer, I don't know what you got going on. Like, that, I'm going to be honest. Like, they might be the hardest production group that I think I might have heard. Like, they definitely in the top three. Them boys bad. Like, they produce Waterfalls and all that for TLC. Like, it ain't even just on Outkast shit. Like, they was on the R&B. They had the 90s on lock.
There's another underappreciated album. Shout out to Dungeon Family that organized and Organized Noise, because it's all collective. Society of Soul, Brainstorm. Oh, my God.
Mm. I'm going to have to check that out.
I think it's out of print now. And because we always share on Off the Cuff, I think it's on eBay for a reasonable price. But
okay.
That album, the first single was Pushing On. Oh, my God. Sleepy pretty much handled, it was him and another chick who handled the lead vocals on it. But the joint, it came out in 95. And, oh, my God. I mean, that's just that psychedelic soulful funk that it's just feel good music when you listen to it, you know? It's just like a down home good plate of soul food with a side of Coke and a great dessert afterwards as a chaser. So you really, really get a full palate of just, yeah, man. When you see
Yes,
absolutely. When you look at production techniques today, you being the professional you are, what do you see in terms of what producers are doing that you like, and what do you see that you don't like?
Well, what I don't like is, like, a lot of guys don't like producers using loops. That don't bother me as much. What bothers me is, though, is these producers are freaking like lazy now. Everybody want to whip up 20 beats in fucking 9 minutes and shit. And it's like, that's really, sometimes it could be like that, but producing ain't a race. The producing, you know, you got to put some respect in this shit. You're in charge of the quality. You're the quality control of the entire record. Like, you set the tone for this shit. Like, what it's going to be.
Right.
So just put that, like, don't try to microwave and make like 100 tracks in a day, guys. You know, make two good records today, two good beats today, one good beat today, five
quality
good beats this week. Though. Yeah. What I do like, though, with these young guys is that these motherfuckers making their own sound. Like they got their own sound. They shit didn't sound like our shit. The beats that they making now, they didn't sound like the beats that we would listen to and making fucking, you know, so. I respect them for that, and the sound is dope. I fuck with, particularly the producers. Like, I don't really like the rap out a lot, but I love the beats and shit. Like, the beats be fucking crazy. Like, the beats is the, one of the only things in the music industry that's gotten better, or at least stay equal to what shit could, used to be. Like, the rap has gone down dramatically to me compared to the 90s, but the beats are still decent. You can still listen to the beats and shit. The young niggas still holding down on the beats. So.
That's true.
Either that or they're trying to bring that energy back. It's like one of the highly critically acclaimed albums out right now is Nas's King Disease after you have Hit Boy. See, what I like what he's doing is he's bringing that whole Johnny J. I think he's a West Coast guy, I think, and he's trying to, you know, mix it a different flavor.
Oh, yeah, my AirPods.
Well, he studied a lot of Johnny J's music.
Yeah, I heard me, my AirPods finna die, guys.
Yeah, but to see Nas, you know, still doing it after all these years, you know, definitely staying relevant and definitely staying respected in the game is serious. What you said earlier, what you just said about, I mean, especially what you said earlier, we want to touch back on that beat about what you said about how artists will get in there. I can't take credit for what I'm about to say. Shout out to Rap Rats. If you've not checked out their IG or their YouTube page, please do. These guys are hilarious as hell with a lot of wit and wisdom. And they talked about in one of their videos about how a producer will be in there talking about how he basically like, yeah, man, I've been cooking up all this stuff. But basically they were saying it as to how a lot of these producers will say that they make a lot of these beats, but they don't sound dope. But it's like they'll try to talk about how long they make things through, you know, making beats. But it's like you said, it's quality over quantity, because it's better to make two or three beats a day that actually really, really are sonically stable. They are melodic.
That's a key thing, sonically stable. Like, a lot of you guys just got this shit blasting loud and screaming and shit. Like, you got to really pay attention to the sonics of it, like, where it's not peaking in certain areas and stuff.
Yeah, and it definitely got to make sure you have your treble. You got to make sure your EQs are right. Got to make sure the balance is straight. Got to make sure you got your hits, your lows. Want to make sure that it floats. You know, some beats are going to be designed for impact.
This was dope.
I
rap producers on the show that we literally get to learn about what creates the magic behind a board. Like, what's the difference between a producer and a beat maker? What's the difference between sonically made records? What are some of the best sonically made records? Like, if we talk about sonically made records, we consider Dr. Dre to be the goat of that, because
Dr. Dre, he might be my number. Him, but it's a tie between him and Organized Noise with me. Like, that, I love both of their sounds. So.
Yeah. I mean, we learned the game. Shout out to our man Dia Lansky out in L.A. You know, he really gave us game on it. You know what I mean? But when you look at a lot of the beat makers in general, like Derringer and Beat Butcher, who've done the stuff for Griselda, really bringing back that grimy 90s flavor. You know, when you look at Droopy, Son of E-40, and the slappers that he be making. Of course, shout out to our boys, the Mechanics out in Oakland. You know, Forax and Kenny Tweed. You know, DJ Mustard, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's all about just making music that really transcends. What do you consider a classic record, Gods? And do you know it when you hear it, in terms of when you create it or when you hear a song and you know it's going to be like an all-time great? You've made a few,
It's hit or miss on that, because it's like, I'm gonna be 100 with y'all. Like, I wish I had that much control over the records, because everything would be fucking hit. The labels got really a lot of control. Like, I have records that I know for a fact is hit fucking records. I got some hit R&B records in the vault that'll blow your freaking socks away, and the labels keep stifling them down because they don't want R&B right now. They want rap. So it's like So, we talking about if I know it's a hit or if the label knows it's a hit. Because, I know shit be a hit. Like, you can hear it. It's a sonically a hit. But the label knows it's a hit, too. It's just not that time for that. That's not what they are on right now. That's not what's making them money right now. So, it's the business side to it, too. You got to do what makes these niggas money. So, and which makes sense. You know, they're investing money in me. It's a business partnership, you know. They give me money. I make them shit that makes them money back so they can give me more money, you know. It's a partnership, you know.
Understood. But, it's business.
Yeah. It's a business, but they do suck sometimes because, like, the producers and writers and artists, we don't have all the creative control that everybody thinks. Like, we make a lot of dope shit. We might make 10 records. And them motherfuckers would be the dopest shit. This is why a lot of music, like, y'all hear, y'all like, man, I'm tired of hearing the same shit. It don't be us making the same shit. We making different shit. They just keep picking the same shit. You feel me?
Right.
We'll
right,
submit these
right.
niggas 20 songs. These bitches, they'll pick. Nah, just being 100. I mean, I ain't tripping, though. Like, niggas be getting mad and shit about this shit. This shit is part of business, though. Like, if a business got a certain product or a certain brand that they trying to sell at a certain time and you ain't coming with what they trying to sell, you know, it ain't applicable for the business to fuck with that product at the time. That don't mean that the product whack. We'll come back and fuck with it next year. You know what I'm saying? Or another time. It just ain't what we need right now. We need some ratchet shit right now. You know what I'm saying? So you'll make a hit as a writer and producer. Know it's a hit. Sound like the most beautiful shit Michael Jackson and Whitney Houston how it sound, but when they get to them, you know, they kind of decide what they want to make the hit at that time. So yeah, it's a lot of shit that I actually didn't like of mine, and I was like, I don't like this shit, and they're like, oh, this is the dopest shit ever, we're gonna make this a hit. I was like, okay, shit, let's do it, you know. That's just, I'm just being given, you know, the real insights behind the shit. Like, a lot of people don't want to say this type of shit because it's the real shit, but I mean, it's the truth, too. I ain't saying nothing like that. Nobody don't know. It ain't like no real secret or no shit like that. Like, but these artists and shit, they got a lot of music that people don't hear that's dope. Same with these producers and shit. Like, I got a lot of beats that's so dope that nobody never going to hear because it ain't going to make the label money right now, so they don't give a damn about it. Which is cool. That's cool with me. Just fucking pay me. Whatever, I guess. Mm-hmm. I'll go make the shit you want. I got you. But that's why a lot of the fans don't get to hear, like, a lot of music that they, and again, that's not blaming the labels either or blaming the artists, because at the end of the day, artists sign contracts and deals and shit, and it stakes this stuff in these deals, you know? Like, they got to recoup their money back that they invest in you, and they got to go with what's selling at the time. You feel me?
Yeah, it's a business.
Nigga put $1 million. It's business. Like, it's just, but people don't want to hear that side. They want to hear all fucking gold chains and big booty bitches and shit. Like, it's business, though. Like, it's literally a business. Like being a fucking a construction worker or an accountant.
It's like Scarface said in the infamous line on longevity. Niggas driving the car the CEO owns. You know what I'm saying? It's really like that.
Man, in the game, one thing about it, you have to learn the rules, and that's how you're able to navigate.
WWE,
yeah. You know,
it's
but pretty
WWE,
much.
Man, but I was going to say this, because you know we're about to wrap it up shortly, man, because I got to get going in a little bit. But It was a pleasure getting you on, man. It's been like, you know, a 10-year grind, but we finally got you to build with us. Now, you care to tell the people where to follow you and, you know, where they can purchase your music and where they can check you?
We got them on, King, or we may have lost them.
Hold on. Let me check right quick. Let me check right quick. Hold on 1 second. Damn studio, I gotta refresh it.
Okay.
But yeah, it's been a great build, man. Like, we can't get them on, man. We just let them know that it's a dope build that we had tonight. We had interesting dialogue talking about the. Yeah, I think he's probably either his phone died or His phone probably died if he's not going to call back. But we're going to go ahead and wrap this up nevertheless, though, man, because we got 5 minutes to spare anyway. And I'll just go ahead and post. I'll definitely post his Instagram following and where to find him and all that to do all the promo for him. But if he's listening, man, definitely thank you, man, for chopping it up with us. It's been 10
Absolutely.
Years in the making and making it happen. We had a dope build about the history of Atlanta, the culture, the business. We got a whole lot wrapped up in this. So definitely check us out tomorrow off the Cuff Radio. We're going to have Mila Monroe on deck for the part of this doubleheader. Thank you, T-Max, for chopping it up with us. And, you know, anybody that's tuned in and listened to this show, we thank you. Big shout-out to Shanetta for making this happen. That's Big Boy, a.k.a. that's Beat God's wife. For making the connection and making this happen. And we out.
Yep. Peace.